Coming up next, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, 2 hours of yabble yabble and squabble squabble. We're talking about civil rights for the poor on the streets of Santa Cruz and about the country, the state, and hey, the world, if we can get that far. Usually people can't hear us that far on this show, but if wherever you're from, we want you to call in. That's 427-3772. You're going to have a special once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to hear Disa and I debating the curfew. Should it be killed or should it be slaughtered? That's the question. Should it be aborted or should it be simply buried before it's born? That's the Board of Supervisors curfew against young people, which will be coming back to haunt us at the Board of Supervisors next week, I believe, maybe a little longer. I'm not quite sure of the exact reappearance of this monstrosity that's going to be lurching forward. We're also going to have other num-nums, including police review activity with John Malkin, who is not going to be in the studio but has given us an extensive interview, which I will hope to dredge up from my handful of tapes that I brought into the studio. We're going to be having an in-the-studio interview with fascist fumigator Ed Fry, local attorney, who tomorrow takes a marijuana felony case to trial. He's going to be talking about that. I'm going to be making various comments as I wrestle through the newspapers on oppressive legislation and curious, ominous court decisions. We're going to be considering judicial misconduct locally and abroad. You're going to be hearing the outcome of my case, my local case in a court that happened last week, almost making me late for my show. And you'll be hearing about the second ever hearing of the Homeless Community Resource Center, perhaps even the first hearing on a case of a woman who was thrown out of the Homeless Community Resource Center and out of the program. We talked to her last show, that's Gina, and we're going to be exploring that case a little further. Stuart Martin Hero, well, that's what a letter writer says today in today's Santa Cruz County Sentinel. We'll be discussing that. Lee Quernstrom has a column in the San Jose Mercury News, of which he brings me up again, in case you don't recognize me in that column. He doesn't call me by name, he just says, King of the Bums. I gratefully accept that title. We're going to be trying to call Paul Marceau of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program and to find out just who's being sheltered these days, and if not, why not. And I even hope to reach Traveling Tom Noddy, who is, as some of you may know, an activist from the 70s and 80s and 90s. He's still around doing stuff about around the issue of street performing. He is, of course, a bubble artist and bubblicious, and he may be home at that time. He may answer the phone, and he may not hang up on us. Who knows? We'll have to find out what he does. We're also going to give you reports from San Francisco, Keith McHenry, and the ongoing Will the Willie Brown regime give new permits to food not bombs. We're going to be considering what's happening with Free Radio Berkeley, which of course will have a lot of impact on Free Radio Santa Cruz. The trial of the FCC has been postponed until Friday the 23rd, as some of you may already know. I note that the in-studio public announcement, the public service announcement, has been changed. We're going to be covering, hopefully perhaps, an interview with best in the business Becky Johnson, who's been has abandoned or been dumped from Channel 71's Community Perspectives, I believe it's called, to start her own show, The Living Room, and maybe she'll be talking to us about that. She's mentioned it briefly. She's also, of course, very eloquent on the subject of mothers' rights, welfare parents' rights, and the situation that is intolerable and punitive for those who are trying to bring up children and with government support in this society. Also hope to get a call, if you're listening, from Coral Broom. Coral, as I call her, I had a great name for Coral, but unfortunately it's slipped out of my noggin. Coral is an activist and a musician who has been covering the controversy around the River Street Campground, or the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, as it once was called, before it was closed in violation of a contract with the campers by head of that shelter and Citizens Committee for the Homeless Employee, pardonnez-moi, Paul Marceau. And she spoke about that issue at the last city council meeting last Tuesday, And I have that speech, and we're going to hear that speech. And I understand she's also been corresponding with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and getting more information. I'd like to hear from her on that. Anyway, we got lots of num-nums coming up. The only thing I regret is we do not have, as promised, two guests, David and Jessica, who spoke so eloquently at the last Board of Supervisors meetings, and they spoke about the curfew, the new lock them in their houses law that supervisors are unfortunately going to pass, I'm afraid, without much resistance, even though there are two supervisors who oppose the law, even though everybody in the room except for three or four or five neighborhood associations from Aptos and Soquel were also in opposition to that curfew law. You probably have read about the curfew law if you read City on a Hill Press. It was mentioned very briefly in a rather police-slanted story in the Santa Cruz Sentinel about a week ago. But without further ado, let me introduce our guest, whose voice you may recognize as the seditious DJ of the show that precedes mine.
Yes, yes, hello.
This is the notorious Disa, is it not?
Yes, yes.
And Disa, how old are you?
I just recently turned 23.
So you, though you look 15 or 23.
Now, yes, but what is the age of the curfew?
The age of the curfew is 17 or under.
Hmm.
If you look under 18, you may be stopped by a police officer in the county of Santa Cruz if and when this curfew law, I should say when this curfew law goes through. You can. There are some exceptions. If you're coming home from an event, even from a demonstration, if you're waiting for a bus, if you are in front of your own house, if you're homeless, you have to, of course, maybe you'll pretend somebody else's house is your house.
Yeah, that's a good question. What happens if you're homeless and under the age of 17?
I'm under the age of 18.
Anyways.
17 or under, yeah.
Yeah, because not only can't you sleep, you can't even be out, can you?
Well, no, you can't.
You can't even be visible.
Well, you have to be in transit from one activity to another. It's sort of like when I say sort of a fascist or a state socialist, the wrong word. Mm-hmm. What used to be called communist, where communist meant Russian Soviet style or Chinese Soviet style communism, you had to account for your whereabouts with internal identity documents, with all kinds of papers. A number of UC students, in fact, were testifying against this law at the Board of Supervisors meeting. They were, in fact, I have some of their testimony, which I'm going to play. I played some of it last show. And again, I had hoped, and if you're listening, OU UCSC students, even if you can't come into the studio, as you promised, you at least can walk, not walk in, but you can call in. And again, I'm going to remind you.
The phone doesn't seem to be working.
The phone doesn't seem to be working.
I tried it earlier.
No, the phone isn't plugged in.
Oh, that's why.
Now the phone's plugged in. I got the Riot Act that you read to me by a fulminating Phil Free, as I'm now calling him. No, just kidding, Phil. That was Phil is a man who keeps the station going and a stalwart on the streets with guitar and growl and guitar, I call him, and a grin and guitar. In any case, he read me the Riot Act for not looking at the board in a sufficiently observant manner. And I do appreciate his help. Actually, I couldn't have told what to do because I think the dials were screwed. But do try to call in. 427-3772 or 427-FRSC is our show.
God, I wish I'd noticed that earlier.
Yeah, well, that's all right. I mean, it's fine with me. It didn't happen on my show.
At least my show isn't a call-in.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I'm glad you're here talking to us because it's always nicer to have somebody in the studio, particularly when I'm discussing an issue that person is interested in. That issue is the curfew. Have you been, where are you from yourself?
I'm from Southern California, Riverside County.
Uh-huh. And have you had any experience with curfews in your life? Anyway, like was there a curfew in Riverside when you were growing up? Or? Probably not. Huh?
Well, not particularly, but yeah, I believe there was mostly a feeling of suspicion. You know, if you were out at night and a cop drove by, you know,
I think you're
sometimes the best thing to do would just be to, you know, jump behind a bush or something. And
is that what you do?
Well, I walked
for
around
like
a lot.
Flashing from bush to bush.
This is actually really sad, and this is more of, I suppose, a personal issue than a political one. But I've always loved to walk at night. I mean, when I was younger, and maybe it's not so safe, they tell me, for a woman to do that at all, but I really like nights. I've always been a very nocturnal person, and I cherish being able to go out at night and wander around and see the moon and just wander. What about just you know, walking around? And what's so wrong about
that's
that?
That's a great thing to do.
I don't know if you know, it's also such a general rule to make a curfew.
So you were a wicked wanderer in your youth, and
but I wasn't doing anything.
I wasn't
causing crimes or robbing houses.
You're inviting men and women to rape you, obviously, right?
I suppose you could look at it that way.
Say that. I mean, any court would agree that you're, you know, this is no.
In this country.
Yeah. It's interesting. I like to wander at night, too, and I often find that there's an entirely different quality at the night than during the day in terms of the psychological impact of walking down the streets. If you can overcome the fear, which is easier for a guy who's 6 foot tall and 235 pounds than it is for a woman who's, I don't know, how tall are you?
But I'm cunning.
You're cunning. Well, it's also a matter of attitude, too, and also if you know what you're doing and you look like you can't be fucked with, you're in better shape to deal with the situation. That's always been my view. If you look like you're crazier than they are, then hey.
But these laws are so arbitrary. Like, the other day I was in Pogonip, and I was wandering around. I didn't have a watch on, because when I'm going on a long hike, I don't want to be reminded of time. I was going by the sun, and the sun hadn't set yet, and we had at least another half an hour of daylight, but this ranger comes riding up and tells me, oh, Pogonip closes at 4 o'clock p.m. during the winter, and I'm like, well, what was I supposed to do? Ask a tree? Hey, tree, what time is it? I have to be out of nature by 4 o'clock. Nature closes.
Well, you obviously should have been carrying your sundial with you.
I guess, but I thought that was strange because, I mean, it seemed to be more natural to go by the sun rather than to go by an arbitrary time. And if they wanted to keep me safe, you know, it wasn't dark yet or anything. I think they were worried about more than worried about me you know, getting raped or mugged. They were probably worried about me sleeping, which is so much worse.
Sleeping, as we know, Pogonip now is within the city limits and so subject to the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, a municipal code passed in 1978, which makes it a criminal infraction to sleep outside after 11 o'clock at night, even in a vehicle, even on property owned by somebody else with their permission, unless we're talking about a backyard or a fenced-in side yard, or unless you're one of three lucky vehicles that gets onto a church parking lot under the exception to the sleeping ban passed last summer by our oh-so-liberal
city
council.
Why only three vehicles?
Well, I asked that same question to Birdseed Byers, who was then mayor, Catherine Byers, city council member now, and she said, we don't want to rush things. All in good time. And in the meantime, all you folks who can't sleep, just hold on in a few years, with patience, it's all going to come around. I mean, it's like what they used to tell. Today is Martin Luther King Day, of course, as many of us know. It's a day set out by the federal government to honor civil rights leader King, who was murdered in, I guess, Tennessee in 1968 in April. And he, of course, was also concerned, as were many of us, as are many of us still, with civil rights for everybody, and particularly for those whose skin looks darker than mine. And what happened then was the... Am I losing my train of thought or what?
Yes.
Tell me what to do next. What show is this?
I think
this is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides.
You started out talking about the mayor.
Right. You were asking why only three vehicles. And I said, that seems to be what the city council is allowing us to do because it takes time. And this was the same phrase. Thank you very much. He's put me back on track. You're hired. The same phrase is often used by conservative Republicans and also crackers down south who, when asked, when will blacks have civil rights? And the answer is time, son, time. You know, just take it slow. I mean, these things take time. Human attitudes take a long time to change. You cannot legislate morality to the human heart, is what Barry Goldwater told the Senate when they tried to pass the first civil rights bill. And, of course, people are legislating morality all the time. As it happens, I'm actually on the other side of that debate now in terms of where legislating morality means telling people when and where they can choose to have an abortion, if or, and when they're going to get jailed for smoking marijuana, if they can use a a needle and a needle exchange program, whether they can, these kinds of issues are, in a sense, moral issues. In another sense, and I certainly don't approve of legislating that kind of morality, but I also, there's another kind of morality, I guess, that I do favor legislating, so I must say I do pick and choose here, and I feel the issue of equal rights is something that has to be legislated and cannot wait until Neil Coonerty decides to, you know, open up the downtown area to everyone. I mentioned Neil Coonerty, he's a Bookshop Santa Cruz owner and former city council member and former mayor, and he has, of course, supported the anti-homeless downtown ordinances, and still does, as far as I know. And we have our main guest is beating a retreat. Has there anything you want to add about the curfew before you go? Again, my usual shotgun approach. I'm abandoning the topic, but actually I'm not abandoning it. I'm just sort of blasting
it's all
around.
It's all connected. Robert Norris is aware of how connected all these issues are, and therefore he goes off on all these tangents.
Schizophrenic, you know? Might be the
problem.
Yeah. Scattered loose associations here on the air.
I'm going to have to abandon you to his ravings.
Anything you want to add about the curfew before you go? You said that you noticed a curfew for you in the Poganet, which in fact is the case. All parks in Santa Cruz have curfews.
Well, yeah, and I was
for everybody.
I was insulted because they were assuming that I didn't have the brains to figure things out on my own, and that they had to tell me exactly what to do and where to be and when. And I think even a 17-year-old or a 16-year-old has some brains, and if they don't, they should learn on their own and not be babysitted and told exactly what to do. And we're not actually going to stop crime it's not even that crime is necessarily committed only by people under 17 or even, you know, the largest percentage of crime committed by young people. I think a lot of it is this country. Okay, this is actually brings up a really interesting issue for me because I read a lot of books and things written by older people about how screwed up younger generations are, including my own generation and the generations below me. And I think that diverting attention toward controlling younger people in the society is taking attention away from fixing any kind of problems, because we can't just control people. That's always been the way in this country. We throw people in prison, we put on a curfew, we're not actually getting at the real problem at all. We're just, you know, locking people up, you know, putting in more laws that aren't actually changing anything. You might have more lucid things to say about this.
No,
but
I think that really puts us in the right track. But what do you recommend? I'll play devil's advocate here and attempt to negotiate you into talking more. What about the explosion in youth crime? There's claimed to be an explosion in crime among the young.
I do have something to say.
How do we do it? Some say the Aptos folks I spoke to, and I did interview a few of them, said that, well, maybe this will help. Maybe this will work. Keeping kids indoors might help.
I disagree. Actually, I think a lot of the reason why young people are so unmanageable is because things are looking bleaker and bleaker economically for people of my generation and people who are younger than me. Things aren't going to get any better for us. I think that it's not just a question of family values, but also a question of our educational system being very poor. Kids are not given tools to think for themselves and make their own moral decisions. They're kind of left morally and traditionally on their own as far as a system of values and virtues, which pretty much are non-existent in this society. And with television being the main influence on most younger people, I think that their thinking and their way of judging and reasoning about the world is really fragmented.
Look, I'm an Aptos parent, and I'm an Aptos resident, and this damn graffiti and tagging is appearing, I don't know if it is, but I assume to some extent it is, nearby. I'm worried that, you know, about all that graffiti I see down on the freeway, if I'm seeing it there, is now going to start showing up in my neighborhood. And, you know, I want my kids protected. I don't want heroin showing up in my neighborhood. I don't want gang violence showing up from the beach flats in my neighborhood. So they say, okay, kids have to account for their presence. The police have to stop them after 11 o'clock at night. What's wrong with that?
Well, because if you oppress a problem, it's just going to get worse, and it's still going to come out in other ways, and there's still going to be destruction of property, there's still going to be vandalism. That stuff can go on any time of the day or night.
Well, you're telling me that if teenagers who might otherwise be drinking and running around in cars, who police might not otherwise have cause to stop, can now be stopped, that they're less likely to do it. I think teenagers are particularly sensitive to the police, and I'm again playing them.
These are
the arguments that came up.
To the police.
Well,
okay.
They're more sensitive to the police. I know when I was 17, I was stopped by a San Francisco cop, and I said something about my constitutional rights, and he started, you know, threatening me, and I really freaked out. I was very upset, and it kind of scarred me for a while. Probably that's the reason I have the problem with authority I do now, because I just couldn't take it, and I got the riot act from a San Francisco cop. I guess the truth is coming out here.
That's an interesting psychological insight that you've revealed there, but
it is.
It's irrelevant to this problem, because also, young people today aren't given anything else to do anyways. I mean, nothing in the society right now is particularly oriented towards, giving young people, healthy values and other things to do at night. No, I'm sorry, it's not relevant. It's not relevant to how young people think today.
Well, I would say some young people certainly are church-oriented. I haven't met many recently.
Well, some young people are also very angry, and their anger needs an outlet, and they need someone to listen to them, and no one is.
Well, my point of view, I guess, is that kids, they're more powerless. People envy them because of their youth. They are just starting out. Their hormones are high. They're up there, and they're a nice target. They're a convenient target to rant at and rave at.
And they have the bleakest future of any generation since the Depression, and even bleaker than that, because our resources are about to be used up to their limits.
Well, certainly the unemployment rate.
Jobs are simply not going to increase.
The unemployment rate in this country is certainly not what it was in the Depression. We were in a much better economic shape than we were then. How can you possibly compare those two?
Better economic shape.
Anybody with a job in McDonald's can just walk in and become a burger flipper, right?
Well, it's very interesting, because the people who are working in McDonald's now, as opposed to, 20 or 30 years ago, the college students are getting the jobs that were once in the 70s and 60s, pretty much for high school graduates or high school dropouts, and the high school dropouts are generally either unemployed or forcing to take jobs that were traditionally for this is not meant to be prejudiced or anything, for black people.
Carlos, if you are disagreeing with what this
you can
raggedy
disagree.
Young person here,
I don't know history. I'm young. I know nothing. However,
are we going to allow her to dictate the agenda for the next 10 years? After all, isn't a simple curfew? It has a sunset clause, or not a sunset clause. It has a re-examination clause. And I think 3 to 6 months, the Board of Supervisors will be able to examine just how many youth have been shot on the street. I'm sorry, how many youth have been stopped by the police, and how successful it's been in terms of preventing crime. I want you to call in, callers. I want you to call 427-3772 and give me some support. After all,
we all know this curfew thing is just stupid, because as long as society has the problems that it does, and the basic internal problems, violence is not going to go away. Teenage crime is not going to go away. Teenage despair and anger is not going to go away.
We have certain.
I think they sense something about the future.
You have friends who have been raped, right?
Yes.
Are you suggesting that the individuals who raped them should not be punished because, after all, it's a social problem, and you're not going to really change the social
problem?
They
definitely should be punished.
Well, why should they be punished? I mean, the problem is not going to go away by punishing them, just like the problem of a curfew. Young people on the streets is not going to go away by telling them to go home or by giving them sanctions if they're out after 11 o'clock at night. Why should we do that? We have to deal with the root of this problem. Don't punish the rapist. Punish the social conditions
that
created him.
No, by putting up a curfew, you're punishing people across the board, regardless of whether they're criminals or not. You're giving everyone, regardless of who they are individually, the same punishment, which is, if you're under 17, regardless of who you are, man or woman, good person or bad person, you can't be out at night unless you have a purpose.
Well, now, the point here, however, is, and that's true what you're saying, but you shifted your argument before you were telling
me. Why not? Everyone does that.
Not on my show, you don't.
You do it all the time, or you just go off on a tangent.
Never would I go off on a tangent.
That's a good way of...
You've shifted your argument from saying that the root causes of crime are not dealt with by a curfew to saying, well, this punishes both innocent and guilty alike. That's a separate argument, whether it punishes innocent and guilty alike. Now, some would say it protects innocent and guilty alike. Those who favor the curfew, I would suppose, would say something like that.
Interesting.
But the question is, what about that argument about it doesn't deal with the root causes? What do you say when you're confronted with someone who's engaging in violent behavior? Are you saying we can't really blame this person or hold him or her accountable because, after all, he's living in a society where there are very few jobs or not enough jobs?
No. Of course I'm not arguing that. That would be the stupidest argument in the world. I'm not saying get rid of all punishment. I mean, most societies, you know, in history and over the world have had, you know, some form of punishment for people who commit grave crimes against society. And I'm talking about the serious crimes, not, you know, smoking marijuana on your front porch, you know, on a Saturday afternoon, but you know, murder and rape. We all agree, and I think most cultures across, you know, across the world and throughout history agreed that rape and murder are both really bad things. I think we can mostly all agree on that. However, whether it's a crime or not to be out at night, you know, if you're 16 years old and you just want to go out and look at, you know, the falling stars or the full moon or something and whatever, I think you can argue is not... a crime and should not be punished.
Again, you're referring to the fact that that there's innocent behavior that's going to be caught up with the guilty, but you're not dealing with the issue of what do you do with violent crimes that happen because there is a rise in violent crimes among some portions of the youth population. There's a rise in gang violence. There's a rise in debilitating and dangerous drug use. We're talking cocaine, heroin, heavy, hard drugs. There is a rise in vandalism, which I suppose some would regard as free speech, but others would regard as not free speech. Vandalism meaning tagging, let's say, and graffiti. How are you going to deal with these crimes if not giving the police the tools to rein in the population that's doing it? Indeed, even if a few innocent people are caught up, they're not going to be really punished. They will go home and... go back to bed.
I don't know. Some people's having to go home to some people's families might be punishment. What if, you know, you're saying the family?
Answer my question. What about the particular crimes we're talking about? How would you advise our society to deal with those crimes other than by a curfew?
Well, that's a very important question. I think most government officials would like to know the answer to that, and I don't think they do. So they're taking the easy way out, which is just trying to suppress. But I think it's important to give young people other options. And I'm talking about options as far as other things to do, but also options as far as in their own minds, they have to have a culture that raises them to be able to think for themselves and for other people in an intelligent and long-term fashion as far as not creating more violence, but understanding that we need a harmonious society. And that's like, I might as well be talking a foreign tongue, because that is not what our culture gives anyone at this point. I think watching television all the time and the quality of television, not to blame television or advocate censoring television, but like, I think that young people with the education that they get in school and the kinds of things that they're exposed to probably can't think of anything more fun to do than going out and vandalizing things and causing trouble, because, you know, well, I'm sure any of us who are young once felt, you know, like running around and creating havoc, but the ante's been upped.
But again, we're looking for solutions here, and I guess I'm
glad. I don't have a solution, obviously.
That's an honest answer, and that I don't know that I do either. If you have a solution or some thoughts on the subject, do give a call to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. That's what you're listening to, Civil Rights for the Poor in Santa Cruz, at 427-3772. That's our call-in number. And I want to thank Disa for being with us. And you're welcome to hang in there, Disa. I just want to know that you're off the hook for the moment. And she's making a break for the door. Stop her. She's too young to get out that door. Well, she looks like she got away. But that's how it goes here. we hope that you haven't left, and we hope that you're interested in giving us a call and kind of giving us your thoughts on some of these matters. In the meantime, we're going to hear from a very authoritative source we were listening to last week on the subject of the curfew. That woman's name is Eleanor Eisenberg, and she's worked with the American Civil Liberties Union for some time, speaks very well, and spoke very well at the Board of Supervisors last Tuesday. We're going to play a bit of her speech again that you heard at the very end of the show, and then play the rest of it, which you didn't hear, and followed by speeches by two other good speakers on why a curfew against the young, proposed by Santa Cruz County, and coming back to the Board of Supes in the weeks ahead, is a bad idea. If you want to protest this curfew, by the way, if you want to urge Simons, Bogard, and Buttes, I guess, those are the three supervisors who favor it, to oppose it, give a call to 454-2200. Again, 454-2200 is the number for the Board of Supervisors, and they will have those supervisors call you back. The more pressure coming in, the better. Here's the supervisors' debate from last Tuesday, and again, the public comment section. You're going to hear Eleanor Eisenberg speaking.
To the extent that the resources for young people and when you...
I'm an attorney with the ACLU, and I'm speaking for the ACLU of Santa Cruz as well as an individual. On the way over here, I was thinking that I should talk to you as a human being. Some people think that's inconsistent with being a lawyer, but I am in fact both, and I'm particularly urged to speak as a human being given the early remark that you are children lawyers. I also want to tell you that I really appreciate the board hearing this matter at this time of day or evening and giving people who are going to be most affected by it an opportunity to be heard. I think it's a wonderful thing. When I was here in November addressing this issue, I did speak to you as a lawyer and raised a lot of constitutional concerns, including selective enforcement. And I should tell you that as a lawyer, I have been handling only civil matters for my 20 years as an attorney. I do very little criminal defense, and I was unfamiliar with juvenile processes in a criminal arena. And as I read the proposed ordinance, I kept scrawling all over it, especially with the enforcement part. When is the hearing? Where is the adjudication? Where is the opportunity to be heard? Where is due process? And it's not there. I talked to several of my friends who practice juvenile law, and apparently, kids are not entitled to a lot of due process. Diversion in the context of a criminal case for a juvenile is often a good idea if it's a serious problem, and I support it. But here you are talking about behavior which is not in itself bad. We are saying it's bad. It's not now we say, which is bad in and of itself, the way hurting somebody or somebody's property would be. It's now prohibited. It's only bad because we say it's bad. And what we are going to be doing is compounding violations of absolutely otherwise innocent behavior by virtue of somebody's age. And they are not going to have an opportunity in front of a neutral third party, a judge, a jury, to defend themselves. This is not the right thing to be doing. In my view, it's not the right thing to be doing as a response to a perceived problem. When there were problems with youth 3 years ago on New Year's Eve, the response of the city of Santa Cruz was not to make more criminal sanctions. The response was to start first night, which was a creative, constructive, wonderful response, which is a win-win situation for everybody in Santa Cruz, not just in the city. The city of Santa Cruz considered this ordinance, and rejected it in favor of an instruction to their staff to do a survey and report back to them on the services and activities that are available to youth in the city of Santa Cruz. Perceiving, I think, correctly that the
And we'll continue on our speech in just a moment.
Brown skin is wearing a blue bandana. That's not the way things ought to be done. Tonight, for the first time, we heard that there's a possibility that people are going to be subject to accusations and citations for violation of the curfew for being in a car. That's the first time I've heard that, and it doesn't fit into the definition of tarrying, which includes strolling, wandering, remaining, and it doesn't say anything about being in a vehicle. It says that you cannot do any of those things without apparent purpose. When I was a kid, hanging out wasn't apparent purpose. And I don't think things have changed a lot. Conversely, and maybe perversely, if somebody stopped who's strolling and being told that they're violating the curfew with no apparent purpose, and they announce that their purpose is to commit a burglary later that evening, does that mean that they're not going to be violating the curfew? A lot of this draft is really nonsensical. So I would object to it on civil libertarian reasons and just by virtue of it being unreasonable, poorly drafted, ill-defined, and those are also things which will render it unconstitutional. Thank you.
Thank you. Forgive me for being a dumb old lady, but I'm homeless and it's cold and my arthritis is as bad as it gets.
You're listening now to speech by Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, who's an activist with Housing Now, an occasional co-host on this show, and a mother and long-term resident of Santa Cruz.
Sorry, I'm pretending to be here. I have two sons. I feel like youth curfew, although it's already being reported, is kind of a glossed over idea or a hopeful policy and not a suggestion for code and pass by the city community. But I didn't pull my two sons. One's 20 and has lived in the streets of the city and Orange County during certain periods of his adolescence, and one was 15, and one was 11 and grew for his age, and looks like a 13, 14 year old. Maybe they're more conservative than the instead of saying, well, what a ridiculous idea, this is unconstitutional, that's what I thought I would hear. They said, well, but you got the cart before the horse. And we passed that on to you. My 20-year-old has been blessed by the things that don't work in the system that somehow humans fill in the gaps with, or the safety net, so-called, totally failed, and I'm talking a few years ago now, individuals. You know, counselors at the youth services, we take puppies home at the little children, all the way up to Judge Black. One of my child's home for a year. He probably had 11 different places he had to live all over the county because, to the extent of the resources for young people and women exist, they're grossly inadequate. And I understand nationally, that's going to grow, and the curve we're seeing now is going to be a lot of youth totally in the streets, totally unsupported by the parents, and this is not an issue of whether the parents care or not, but we can talk about that possible. And totally at the mercy of how we respond as a community. So I would like you to consider my two sons' concerns and think about putting this effort and energy and structure into the resources for children who have places to be in the evening throughout the county. And look secondly, or maybe never if it works well, if we rise to this occasion and not make victims out of our children, but in the worst case scenario, we look at something like citations and misdemeanors and pushing these unnecessarily into the criminal justice system. I want you to know that the day that Sheriff Mark Tracy came to you asking what you wanted him to do with this idea, since it wasn't going to truly countywide in the original conceived sense, that same day when your incoming correspondence, I read a letter from a federal agency promising $200,000 to our county's sheriff department that they could save children from leading themselves in the path of crime. It seems to me that we're trying to create criminals in order to get money to give them a criminal's community. So I would really like to know and find out that I'm being valuable family and all. But it looks to me like this is just an artifice creating. It's unnecessary. Thank you.
My name is Robert Norris. I live here in Santa Cruz in the city. I'm a critic of this Code of Life and Civil Rights Subcommittee of the Above the Line Community Consortium. I work with HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And I particularly live in how this law affects homeless young people throughout the county. The Code of Report talks about appropriate placement of homeless youth, but it says nothing. It means no places for people to be taken or to go. To youth in flight from abusive households, youth without homes, youth hiding from sleeping bans and anti-homeless laws, this is a skewer. This is a trap. This is not a solution. Aside from the Public Defender's Office, I was pretty much a voice in the wilderness on the Criminal Justice Council where this issue was first raised this summer, this curfew law. I felt confronted by a prefabricated juggernaut orchestrated by law enforcement officials with a predetermined result looming ahead. In the months that followed, I'm afraid my fears were confirmed. Repeated attempts to get input to Sheriff Tracy's office and treated with silence. His report suffers from the absence of any critical input. I predicted when I spoke to you in September, and I predict now, that protests, tumult, and costly lawsuits will result if this law is enacted. And this is not set on an issue of threat, but just a prediction. I point out the case of Deputy Todd Liberty and his videotape beating, which cost the county $500,000. I don't want to say another piece of bad judgment like that, but we need are not prohibitions, but resources for the young, for the homeless, for all of us. Law enforcement can be such a resource if police focus on violent crimes and not status crimes. The inherent unfairness of the youth curfew law, the usurpation of parental rights, the undermining intent rather than concern this shows to the young sets up the cops and the community for trouble. Legislators are using the new drug prohibition as an excuse to expand police power. The jails fell out with victimless drug criminals, and more jails are built to simply use the drug war to expand police power and confiscate booty to bolster the budgets of impoverished cop shops. There's a lesson here, and I would like to repeat the question that LeMaster just asked. Are we talking about federal and state money pot available for police departments willing to trade parental rights and youth privacy for a bundle of room? I mean, that's the question for me. Creating a repressive law in a hothouse environment from which critics are excluded is not a recipe for success or an exercise in democracy. Neither the Criminal Justice Council in July nor the Sheriff's Office in the fall has solicited any significant youth, homeless, or civil libertarian input. Supervisor Youths promised us an opportunity for inquiry, cost analysis, social services reaction in September, promising Supervisor Keeley there would be no votes until that input was received, that there would be no rush to judgment with the curfew returned to his chambers. I think it is fair to suggest that any substantive votes on this curfew be put over from tonight until we have information from the CAO, social service agencies, and the community, information that we need. Supervisor Simons has properly taken the mayor of Santa Cruz to task for deporting 4 dozen homeless people evicted from what was the only legal homeless campground in the county. Earlier today at the Santa Cruz City Council, I publicly confronted the welfare work of the campers and turned them into modern-day refugees. I would like to be sure that this board keeps its word to the public, that it will allow time for the input the Sheriff's Department has not, that it will not take any votes until more information is received, and that it will subject this proposed law to the scrutiny that our community and our young people deserve.
And that was yours truly at the Board of Supervisors last Tuesday in one of many speeches against the proposed 11 to 5 a.m. youth curfew. In the studio with me now is father and attorney Ed Fry, who certainly has an interest in having his children protected from gang violence. Ed, what do you think of the youth curfew?
Well, it's just another band-aid on a serious social problem. I don't think it's the right approach at all. I think we ought to give our kids places to play, places to be creative, places to put on plays, to play basketball, to do any number of creative activities that will, you know, get them interested in themselves and in their own abilities and build their self-esteem, rather than, you know, come down on them once again as bothersome non-entities, which is kind of the way government and a lot of parents treat their kids.
So then you would disagree with those who feel that gang violence, graffiti, drug use is reason enough, soaring violent youth crime is reason enough to give the police power to at least interrogate and send home youth found out late at night between 11 and 5 in the county?
Yeah, we're massively misallocating all of our resources, and the sheriff's department ought to take the initiative. They have the statutory authority to take the initiative in crime prevention activities, and they ought to be taking a positive approach rather than this negative coming down on top of the kids approach. You know, we just have to devote a substantial amount of our resources to children. Something we're not doing now. Something we're taking away resources from our kids, and we've just got to reverse that massive scale.
How many children do you take care of, Ed?
Well, it depends on the weekly census. This week there's 4 kids at home. My kids come and go. I mean, some of them getting in their later teens, and so a lot of them are off doing this and that. So, but there's 4 younger ones at home.
And how many kids in total are in your family?
10.
Pretty large family by Santa Cruz standards.
Well, it's a blended family, hers, mine, and ours, that sort of thing, and somebody else's too. I mean, we've taken in other kids from other families at various times. But
so you'd call yourself a family man?
Well, yeah, I can't avoid it.
And probably others would call you a family man too.
I would hope so.
What do your kids think of this proposed curfew? Have you heard any talk from them about it?
No, they don't talk about it.
Well, the less said, the better, perhaps. Although, unfortunately, I'm afraid this curfew is going to become law in a couple of weeks. Supervisors are not meeting